All right, welcome into the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Paul Daniel Jr. and Jason Williams here, Cincinnati.com, the Cincinnati Inquirer. What's up?
What's up? Back in the booth.
Back in the booth, baby. After our big foray into the mix. We were in the Flying Pig Smale Park mix on Friday. It was a good time.
Went on the road, had some roadies. Our road crew.
Had some roadies, had the road crew. We had lots of people coming up and
people bringing us waters and beer.
Yeah.
Taking care of us, bringing us hot towels and cold towels to make sure we were
yeah.
The talent was okay.
Right. Yeah, lozenges, you know, neck massages just to try to make sure that we stay loose.
Appreciate our road crew.
Yeah.
Our road crew of one. Yeah. Phil Didion.
Phil Didion, ones and twos. It was a good time. Got to talk about grandma's homemade getup being the most Cincinnati thing that anybody
that was
came
awesome.
Up and talked about. Yeah. So if you haven't heard, you haven't listened to the episode, it is up. It was sort of a special one-off we did from the end of the 50 West Mile, which was all one of the part of the festivities of Flying Pig Weekend. We talked to course director John Capella about the insane logistics of the pig, and a bunch of people came up and offered their most Cincinnati moments, young, old, yeah. Male, female, everyone. It was really a good time.
It was a fun episode. I had so much fun doing that. John was great. Great guest, great insight in the pig, and then just, you know, kind of this organic thing, people coming up. And I tell you, like, you know, from kids to, you know, young adults to older folks coming up, and it was just great. And the grandma's ghetto was just...
It's perfect.
Has there been a more soest Cincinnati?
Yeah, I know. It's
there. Cincinnati.
Oh, there it is. It was perfect.
Did on the show through 35, six episodes.
Well, you know, and I really enjoyed just a random guy from Texas who wandered up to drink beer and hold a stuffed animal of a pig. And he was like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "I'm just down here drinking and holding this pig
here from Texas.
That just here. It's all right."
And then we had a discussion about chili with him.
We did, but we don't need to go into that. We don't need to talk about
it's a sore subject,
chili or bowls of chili or any of that. Just go back and listen to the episode. It was a lot of fun and good stuff. A really great insight on the pig. And congratulations to everybody that ran, that supported, and finished that over the weekend because it's just a great event.
What a great accomplishment for people to finish even the half. I mean,
how about my man with the five way? He ran like 49 and a half miles on Sunday.
That was Beer Fest guy, right? Was that Beer Fest guy?
Dude, I don't, all I know is.
Wait, the guy that did the Beer Fest?
No,
that wasn't him. Oh, okay.
No, yeah. He didn't drink beer for 46 straight days. No, and then run 49 miles.
I thought that was the same guy that did that. You were talking about the guy who did the beer fast, right? You met him, or
I know him, but that's not who I'm talking about.
That's not okay.
No,
I thought you were talking the other day about that same guy was also doing all the races. Okay,
no, shout out to Del Hall who did only drink beer during Lent.
Lent.
Who is a manager over at 50. I mean, that is an impressive. I don't know what's more impressive, that or doing the five way where you run every single race during the weekend and then you do a half marathon. Do a half marathon and then start over and run the marathon after that?
And then run the full, yep. And then the day before you ran, what, the 5
and the 10K? Ran the 5 and the 10. What is wrong with people? That's amazing. I don't know if I'm scared. I honestly don't know if I'm scared or impressed. That's just an insane thing to do.
You know what?
That's the kind of thing that we would do, though.
To each his own. That's my mom.
Yeah.
My grandma would say growing up, to each his own.
Yeah.
Definitely, to each his own on this one.
Definitely a better chance that you and I follow in Del Hall's footsteps than Five Way Guy, I think, for sure.
Hey, wait, I got to say something before we go on, because she's going to be upset if I don't say congratulations to my wife for finishing the 10K.
Boom.
And the Step Forward team at City Gospel Mission, which is an awesome program that started a decade ago that helps people in drug and alcohol recovery, men and women, are run different races in the pig. And what's cool is that it's added the physical fitness element to their recovery process, and it's been such a success. And the team is huge and they've got lots of sponsors, and the pig has really been great to them. And so congrats to all those folks who did it. And cool video from a lady who an older lady who a lot of orthopedic issues, but was the last person to finish the 10K, the very last, but she finished it, and all these people coming around her and help her kind of walk that last couple hundred yards.
Awesome. So, yeah. Yeah. Actually, of note, combining the two podcasts, I do, the Bengals have a social justice initiative that they donated a bunch of money and time with their players to City Gospel as part of it. There's like five different pillars of places that they're helping out, and City Gospel is one of them. They're spending a bunch of money over there and donating. So
I know they've been active there.
Yeah,
so it's cool.
Really, really good stuff that they do. So we've got we're going to have Scott Wortman come on. We're going to talk about gerrymandering, which has really come to the forefront after ruling from – that's on Friday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
About the need – they're going to have to redraw the districts by June, potentially. 14th. Potentially, but the Supreme Court is involved. So a lot to get to there. Scott is going to be great to come in and talk all about that. Scoop's in the house.
Scoop is in the house. He's our regional political reporter and our Hamilton County government reporter, and does a lot and keeps his finger on the pulse of a lot of different politics and government stuff around here. So looking forward to having him on for the first time. And there's a lot of news lately that he can talk about.
Sheriff's race getting interesting. We can dive into that a little bit too. So lot to get to with Scott. And after that, we'll have our That's So Cincinnati moments. I've got a bit of a That's So Cincinnati announcement. So news, little news coming on the flip
side.
Be
sure you listen all the way to the end, folks. This is
little news coming
on
the back
end. Coming
little
on the
news.
Back end.
So we'll have all of that coming in today's episode. And reminder, iTunes, Google Play, iHeart, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts, we are there. Just search That's So Cincinnati.
So Cincinnati.
That's right. And you will find us. You can download, subscribe, all of those things. Thanks to everybody that has been doing so. It's been great to watch the following grow as we have gotten started with this thing. Shoot, we're on. What are we on now, Phil? 35,
okay.
Episode 35. So it's been
still
a lot
feels like number one, man.
You know, every day's fresh with
so
you,
fun,
Jason.
So fun.
No doubt. Let's dive into so Elizabeth Warren's coming to Bogart's. I don't know who's opening for her. Who's opening for Elizabeth Warren? Is it I don't know, Four Non-Blondes?
it would seem like it'd be more like a
it'd be somebody more contemporary,
like,
I guess.
Like a 70s.
Oh yeah, no, you just go seven. Go back, get back into the 70s.
I don't know.
Yeah. What is up with that venue choice? Are we okay with it? Is that just because
I actually think it's kind of cool? Like, as you politicos know, that Elizabeth Warren is trying to be make herself more attractive to younger voters and attractive in a political way to appeal is what I'm trying to say. Appeal to younger voters and a more broad base of voters. So she did on New Year's Eve, she did the YouTube video, or I think it was an Instagram or some kind of Facebook Live video, where she was in her kitchen and she's talking to folks, taking questions. She's like, hang on a second. Well, I want to get me a beer. And she went to her fridge and got herself a beer, cracked it open, and had it. And so I see this Bogart's thing as kind of along those same lines, where she's trying to appeal to
College campus. Yeah, I mean, I get it. Drop yourself into the college campus, be young.
I think it's kind of cool. And I'm not sure. I've never known of a political, at least a national political figure, coming in and having an event at Bogart's. I guess I haven't really looked it up, but just my own knowledge of following the news here, I don't recall anything like that happening.
Yeah. Maybe we should holler at our friends over at Tribe to go open for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'd be perfect.
They're going to be at Bunbury this summer, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. They're
Bunbury.
One
is
of
Bunbury
the,
or Bunbury?
Bunbury? Bunbury?
Bunbury.
No.
Like Burberry?
This is not So Cincinnati of us to not know the proper pronunciation of that.
Cincinnati.
Right? Bunbury. I've always called it Bunbury. Called it Bunbury. And so
that's what you say. Then, that's
but Tribe. So Tribe. Yeah, well, Tribe will be. Yeah, I think they're the local. They're one of the few Cincinnati local acts on the bill. But they're awesome, as you know. If you've listened to that's a great episode to go back and listen to. If you're going back through the archives,
yeah,
the Tribe episode was great. Some solid rapping from Peace.
Yeah, he was good.
What? I mean, her coming here is what? I mean, what is the meaning? Is there a bigger picture significance to Elizabeth Warren coming here and going to Bogart's?
Well, Elizabeth Warren is really speaking the language of trying to speak to the disenfranchised worker, the types of folks who are being laid off at Lordstown GM's plant. She's really trying to hit that blue collar worker right now, and there's really no better place to come than Ohio. There may be a better place in Ohio to go than Bogart's in Cincinnati, but as she tries to make inroads in the middle of the country, this is the message she's trying to bring, and the fact that she's going to come here and do it in more of a kind of contemporary venue, or I don't know, younger people's venue. I don't know if it's not really younger, but I mean, we've known Bogart's for decades, so everybody through the decades has gone to Bogart's for a concert, and people are still going there. But you know, she's really trying to speak to middle America, and can she do it? I don't know. I had talked to David Niven, political science professor at UC, the other day, and I'm doing a piece coming up later this week on can Joe Biden win Ohio in a general election. And he actually brought up that he thinks that Elizabeth Warren would give, if he thinks, number one, he would have the best chance of anyone in the field right now.
Biden would.
To win Ohio in a general election against Trump. But he also thinks that, I asked him, like, who do you think, what running mate would also give him that best chance? And I mentioned Harris, Kamala Harris, and he actually said, he's like, yeah, she'd be good. But he's like, I actually think Elizabeth Warren could be even better. And he spoke to the, I was a little bit taken aback, and David Niven absolutely knows his stuff. And he said, because she's speaking that, speaking to workers, speaking to the blue collar workers, and as we know, this is has the Rust Belt state, where if you speak to those workers out in the Mahoning Valley and really across the state, you know, you have a chance.
Yeah, I mean, certainly going against Trump, you know, we saw the last election, but you've got to win over some of those. I mean, you're not, you can't just carry the three C's and think that that's going to be enough. Yeah. It's just not. I mean, and so you have to have some sort of connection. I mean, that's part of the big picture of Trump's stranglehold is the fact that he has owned those areas.
I mean, putting my columnist hat on, I just don't see it happening. Having, you know, covering politics in Ohio and growing up in Ohio and being in touch with having grown up in the Appalachian part of the state. And
shout out Gallipolis.
It's really, really, really hard for me to see how Elizabeth Warren can make inroads as a an East Coast person. To me, like, I don't see any of the folks who are on the coast really connecting in Ohio. I mean, obviously, Joe's from Delaware, but he just has that, you know, that Uncle Joe feel about him. Mm. Whereas Elizabeth Warren, I believe, is viewed more in Ohio, and of course, generally speaking, is my opinion that she's viewed more as sort of a coastal elitist and a little out of touch with the middle America. And it's just hard for me to see Ohio voters connecting with her.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. And the thing is, you know, who isn't running or trying to run for president at this point? I mean, there's so many people out there right now. I mean, the process of how this is going to dwindle down to whatever is really going to be as fascinating as the actual main race is going to be, because because everybody, you know, it's sort of the Trump ripple effect, is everybody thinking, I'll run for president. I mean, you can just get in there, get in the mix, and you can make it happen. I mean, apparently.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I also think, if I could add on Elizabeth Warren, is that Trump has really beaten her up politically with the whole, you know, DNA thing and the Pocahontas thing, and you know, he continues to you know, pound on that. And I think when you think about Ohio being Trump country, that's really like kind of embedded in people's minds that, oh, that's the Massachusetts senator that Trump's been said is, you know, is criticized. And so, you know, I think that'll be even hard for her to overcome as well in Ohio because of what Trump has said about her.
Yeah. So we'll be tracking that. You'll have something on Biden coming.
Yeah, actually Scott Wortman is going to cover the Elizabeth Warren event on Saturday. So be checking Cincinnati.com on over the weekend.
Yep.
For our report on that, and it's our first. It's interesting. Here we are, less than a year out now from our primary. Next year will be in March. So less than a year out from the 2020 primary, and this is actually our first Greater Cincinnati's first visit from what you consider a serious Democratic contender.
Get used to it, though.
Absolutely, because
it's going to be a steady flow.
Well, I don't know.
You don't know?
Because the Democrats right now view us as sort of we're not top of mind right now because of how much Trump controls Ohio. And so they're spending their time elsewhere.
The
right
thought
now.
Is just get we got to find a different path is the exactly is the, their thought. Yeah,
exactly. But you're you know, to go back to your point, get used to it. I do think we're going to see a lot of Biden because I do think Team Biden, whereas maybe the party doesn't see Ohio as top of mind. I think Team Biden does. And so I think you will start to see, you know, Kamala Harris was in Cleveland last week. So I think you will start to see some of those top tier contenders come to Ohio, and especially if you can think of a merger between potential merger between Biden and Harris or Biden and Warren, so in a running mate type of thing. So I think you will start to see some of that, just not as much as what we have in years past.
Right, and certainly, yeah, I mean, certainly with last time with the Republican just pounded Ohio.
Exactly.
And they were here. It was constant.
Exactly.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly.
I think we are. I absolutely do think we will see plenty of Trump.
Yeah.
In the next 10 months. Ohio is absolutely critical. I mean, absolutely critical for him to get reelected. And yeah. He has to make sure that he keeps Ohio. And right now he's spending a lot of money in Ohio on digital advertising. And so I think we're going to see him not just in Greater Cincinnati, but across the state.
All right. Well, keep an eye out for all that stuff you're talking about there in Jason's columns this week. And to get a little bit more into some of this, and really one of the most interesting things that's happened in the last week, and that has been the gerrymandering situation and ruling. So nobody better to bring that than our regional politics reporter, Scott Wortman. So let's bring in Scoops. All right, welcome Scott Wortman in as it is interview time. Scoop!
Thanks for having me. Glad I made the cut today.
You made the
first
cut.
Fast accurate.
Yeah, that's me. I'm going to lay down some white hot truth.
There was no cut. You were on the top of the board this week because there's a lot going on in your
there
world.
Is.
I don't feel like there is. We've really been wanting to dig into this gerrymandering thing.
Oh, let's do it.
Because
head first.
Well, you know, I do think that it is a very interesting and impactful, obviously, for this area and for Ohio. What did you think about the decision coming down the way it did, where they're going to have to redraw everything by June? I mean, did this surprise people, or was this kind of what people were expecting?
No, I mean, in other states, like in Pennsylvania some of the states now are not coming, but decision, other courts have struck down decisions in other states like Pennsylvania.
Carolina was one.
I think so, yeah. I'm drawing a blank too. I just went over them yesterday too.
It's been challenged in about a dozen states, but it hasn't been. Has it been upheld in any states that you can think of, Jason?
I
don't think so. I mean, because it's quite clear in the testimony too, the chances of districts being drawn the way they are is so remote by just pure chance or fairness that they're really, it's hard to defend.
Yeah. So what's next with this? I mean, we're going to go from this to the Ohio Supreme Court, right?
Yes.
That's the next step.
Yeah, the Republicans
here
are challenging. I mean, the federal judges said that, hey, the legislature's got to redraw the districts, but the Republicans are going to appeal this to the Supreme Court.
That's U.S. Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah. Did correct? You say, yeah. Say, yeah, yeah, it's yeah, the U.S.
Supreme Court.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry. And so the Republicans are hoping that they can get this on hold, so they might not have to redraw it by 2020, depending on whether the court grants that or not.
Essentially, they're just trying to, what they're going to try to do is run the clock out, because it's already been decided by the state legislature that they are going to redraw the lines, and they're getting rid of gerrymandering already, not but in 2022.
Mm-hmm. After the census.
Essentially, this would be expediting what they were going to do anyway in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yes. Yeah. But it would make it for the next election cycle.
But so. Yeah, right now they want to run out the clock on this, try to get a stay, and then eventually, 2020 came along, and okay, well, nothing happened, so in 2022 everything changes and we'll just go with that.
Because if this is in play for next year's election, that is going to be chaotic, because you're going to have a lot of Republicans that have like Steve Chabot, for instance, that have been safe up until now. They may have to run in just Hamilton County, which is severely Democratic, and they're definitely in jeopardy. You're going to have a lot of Democrats wanting to get up to the plate.
We talked so much about this during the Chabot-Puravol race, mm-hmm. about how the gerrymandering of the district was really the determining factor and the game changer in this whole thing, because you're just able to own that top little... What do you even call
Warren,
that?
Warren
what
County,
shape is that? I mean, yeah.
Well, what one of the most telling things on election night, I was at AFTAB's headquarters there, and everyone was looking at the results from Hamilton County. Like, he won. Like, they didn't realize Warren County existed.
Right.
And Chabot ran up the score in Warren County, and AFTAB didn't stand a chance.
Because what did he win? He won Hamilton County by over 20,000
like
votes.
Six or seven percentage points, I believe. Yeah. Yeah. He won fairly handily in Hamilton County, but he won by like 30 percentage points in Warren County.
Really? There's no county in the state that will be more clearly affected than Hamilton, right? Just because it has swung so blue inside and is so red outside, that the change is going to be the absolute game changer.
There's like one in near Columbus and some in Northern Ohio too, though, that
But I think that I you're right. I don't. I've asked around about this. I know you have as well, Scoop. That I think Greater Cincinnati is ground zero for this, and I think Steve Chabot is number one on the list of who's going to be affected by it.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to follow anyone's talking point, because I don't care either one way or the other. But I can't see a path to victory for Steve Chabot once the lines are redrawn. Basically, what it would do is it would take almost all of Hamilton County would be one district. You would carve out about 100,000 people, and more than likely that's either going to go to Winstrip's district to go out east, which is a pretty fairly natural district, mostly rural, or you come down to Warren Davidson's district and maybe he grabs some of that 100,000 of Hamilton County. But for the most part, all of Hamilton County would be in one district, which would be, I think, is what most people are agreeing on, is that would be Steve Chabot's, what currently is Steve Chabot's district.
Yeah, and based on the results of his last race, where AFTAB easily won Hamilton County, you're right, I don't see a path to victory for any Republican.
And when does he have to run again?
In 2020.
So this is going to be the decisive.
These next few weeks here are going to be pretty wild, I think, because the deadline to redraw the maps, as the court said, was June 14th. And
it's now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a month from now. And I was thinking about this last night, too, Scoop, that, what might be the most interesting thing that shakes out of this whole thing is the lineup of Democrats who are going to go for this. And so less than a year from now, we might have this crazily intense Democratic primary for
absolutely,
and that's probably going to be the more intriguing thing about than who's going to actually beat Steve Chabot. It's going to be who's going to come out of that primary.
I'm not going to be able to take any vacation next year. This is going to be
this is really bad for you. This is really bad turn.
get it in now.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that, and you'll have the Dieters thing. We'll have that whole president thing. I mean, it's going to be truly chaotic year. So we really did take all vacation.
But then again, the court could be like, well, we'll put it on hold for 2 years and then nothing happens. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So, changes everything.
We'll see.
Let me, I want to ask, speaking of that, transitioning into talking about 2020, and we're talking about all these races, we already do know of another intense race, and that the Hamilton County Sheriff's race. We now have a primary, and can you talk a little bit about that, Charmaine McGuffey?
Absolutely, yeah. It's one of the former top jailer in Hamilton County who left under less than auspicious circumstances from the Sheriff's Department last year. She ran the jail, was either she left or she claimed she was fired. I've seen it both different ways, but she was demoted basically. And they claim she created a hostile work environment. She claimed she was discriminated against because she's gay and a woman, and they didn't, and the deputies did not like that. So there's an ongoing lawsuit, but while that in federal court, but while that's going on, she's challenging Jim Neal, and she's going to be, it's going to be in the Democratic primary. She's pretty far left. Jim Neal, a former Republican, is a very conservative, Democrat, so that's going to be a very, very interesting and very contentious and nasty race.
It very much is. And if you look at initially when I thought about this race, I thought it was just really it was kind of the progressive wing per se of the Democratic Party. But then I started really asking people, and I look more at her host committee list, and it's not just it's kind of across the board Democrats that are lining up behind her, and some big money Democrats as well, some establishment Democrats, some progressive Democrats. So I think this is going to be an intense race. It's the narrative that McGuffey is going to be able to push here is that Jim Neal went to the Trump rally in March of 2016 in Westchester. And that's really why there is, or that's one of the reasons why there actually is a primary, because it really upset a lot of people in the Democratic Party that he went to this Trump rally. And now that's going to follow him around in a year and in a primary where the Trump backlash is expected to be crazy intense. He's got a tough road ahead, I think.
Well, everything goes back to Trump, too, and everything politically nowadays. And I asked Jim Neal whether, you know, he regrets going to the Trump rally and whether he, you know, whether he supports Trump. He wouldn't say whether he supports Trump or not. So he wouldn't disavow Trump, which that's almost a death knell for any Democrat running if you're not going to distance yourself from Trump.
And, you know, the interesting thing, you know, it's interesting you say that, Scoop, because that is a very general election mentality, and he's been able to be successful through two elections because he hasn't had a primary, and he's gotten a lot of crossover votes. He got in the 2016 election, he got more votes than everyone who was running countywide except for the coroner, Lakshmi San Marco. That means he got more votes in Hamilton County than Trump did, than Hillary did, than Rob Portman, and then everyone else who had a head-to-head race. But that kind of an answer right there is not going to fly in a primary.
Yeah. He's not going to survive the general election if he goes. Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing too, Scoop, is that there's quite a bit of buzz in the from Republicans that that maybe they can convince him to come over and run with them. And the fact that his campaign, when I asked last week, they declined comment. They didn't just come right out and say, hell no, we're a Democrat or, maybe. I don't know. I think it says also maybe isn't the best approach.
Well, my biggest question given the makeup politically of Hamilton County, is whether being a Republican is an advantage if you're running in a countywide race, because you look at what happened last year with the county commissioner race. Yep. Chris Monzel, a name brand, a veteran politician, been around for two decades, loses to a virtual unknown who did very little campaigning, and probably simply because she had a D bought by her name.
You know, you're exactly right. And I wonder, either way here, it's going to be a tough, tough year for Jim Neal. His job is on the line. So does he stick it out and run in a primary where he's clearly tied to Trump in some way, and in a you know, Trump back last year. As you said, everything's tied to Trump. Mm-hmm. Or does he switch parties and have that used against him mm-hmm. and still a blue county? And does he roll the dice and think in an election year or in a presidential year that potentially there's enough Republican votes, independent votes, and moderate Democrat votes that get him reelected? I don't know if I see the path to victory either way, to be honest with you.
If I was running his campaign, I'd make my head hurt. I wouldn't know which way to
absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely.
Can I want to ask you, you have a lot of connections over in Northern Kentucky, and I feel like we've been talking about this Ovation site for forever.
Because we have.
How, I mean, this goes back to
2006.
Six? Yeah.
Yeah. You tweeted years. About, what, 13 years?
Yeah. George W. Bush was president. Yeah.
I mean, and so now there's another.
My
there's
spirit wasn't crushed yet. I was still young and up and coming.
No Facebook, no Twitter.
Yeah. And now there's another announcement coming this week about something. Is this going to be, hey, we're really going to do it now? Or is something really going to happen? Or is this just the latest spin on the carousel of, hey, maybe Ovation site
will
actually
be
become a thing?
That would be pretty funny if they call a press conference and say, we're not going to do anything with this site. We're going to leave it vacant.
We decided we're done with this. You know, we want another 13 years of circling the drain.
I mean, I would imagine it's got to be something. They won't say what it is exactly, but it's got to be something.
What has taken so long?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, there have been a lot of rumors about why. I mean, you can't dispute. I mean, it was 2006 when they first announced this. They demolished a housing project that had been there since the 50s.
And for people that don't know, you probably were familiar with this site because of it was where the FC Cincinnati Northern Kentucky stadium was going to be. So if you don't know what we're talking about, it's right there on the other side of the river.
Right at the corner of the Licking River and the Ohio River. Yeah. In fact, you can't get, in my opinion, a more centrally located piece of property in the urban area for the entire
great
region.
Great skyline view, too.
And it's been so mystifying that for the entire Cincinnati region, right in the center of it has been just a vacant gravel, weed-covered, 11-acre site.
And you go, I mean, as you know, you've been there many, many a times. That's right. It's a prime real – like, what has been the whole – I mean, what –
part of it was the housing crash. I mean, it was the worst possible timing, a lot of things. But then, I mean, one of the initial proposals for that site was a casino, which could never get passed in Kentucky. Steve Beshear, the previous governor, tried his whole entire tenure, 8 years, to get legalized gaming passed for the riverfront communities, never could get it through. So it kind of just sat. I mean, now, CorpRex says they did not – they weren't just looking at a casino. That wasn't why it was held up. But people have often speculated that, you know, they didn't get initially what they wanted. But also, it's just a massive project. I mean, it was $1 billion. There were $2 billion projects proposed back then for Northern Kentucky. The other one, Manhattan Harbor, which is a little further east on the river in Dayton. They've built a little bit of that. That was that weird, like, Dubai-esque project where they raised the riverbank, 20 feet.
Yeah.
And he did do it. He did. But then they've kind of struggled to get, you know, they've got, like, 7 houses built there. So everyone 10, 15 years ago had, like, these big eyes of, like, we're going to, you know, build, you know, 5,000 homes. And you know, obviously, you know, that's easier said than done.
So Cincinnati, right? So
greater Cincinnati.
My guess would be that this is, I mean, I don't know. This is a speculation, but my guess is this will probably be a scaled back version, I would think.
Phase 5 phase, 7 phase,
but it's better than nothing.
You need to just get something started there and let it start to grow itself. I mean, because you're right, that can't just sit there like that.
And this is one of the few developments I have never heard a single opposition. Everyone, the people that live there want it. I mean, there was really nothing there. The only thing that was there beforehand were parking lots and liquor stores. So,
Who's like, you know what, we cannot get rid of this. I need these parking lots and liquor stores and these weeds.
And the housing project was there, but they've actually Newport's done a fairly good job of building public housing throughout like the Newport area, and they've kind of spread it out. And I've not really even heard much complaints about how they've done that, which is also rare for public housing.
Yeah, I still think it was the best site. Well, no longer is, but was the best site for mm-hmm. FC Cincinnati Stadium, but they didn't want to be in. They wanted to be in Cincinnati.
They wouldn't have had to relocate anybody.
Nope.
There would have been none of this relocation stuff. The zoning would have gone through quickly. It would probably be built by now.
When you take urban core,
no, I'm serious.
I mean, Scoop. Yeah. When you take urban core available mm-hmm. land, and we're talking about urban core being Cincinnati, Covington, Newport, urban core. There's probably no larger or prime site than the Ovation site.
Mm-hmm. Centrally located, and it would have had. I can't think of any impact on any resident.
I try not to let myself think about it, because you can kind of get frustrated about it mm-hmm. because when you think about what FC Cincinnati is going through right now with some displacement of residents, you're right. None of that would have happened there. And we may have already started to see some stadium walls over there.
You know
there.
What's funny is this is just reminiscent of the Banks project on the other side of the river, where yep. it's like where once they get started and you start doing it, it's like, why did this sit like this for? Why did this take everyone yep. so long? Because so much of the fighting about how exactly it's going to look. It's like, look, everything you put there is going to work out well. Like, but the fact that you take forever is really what's killing you, that you're not just yeah. doing something with it, because this is the same way where once this, whatever it is, ends up being completed, people are going to look back and say, how did this ever sit like that for yeah. 13 years, mm-hmm. this prime real estate?
I wouldn't be surprised, too, if one of the things that's finally jump-starting, I mean, that ostensibly, and it is true, they were waiting for the highway project, Kentucky 9, which mm-hmm. is this, I believe it's four lanes that goes through the west of Newport, connects with the AA. But also, and I'm hearing this anecdotally, I have some friends that own property in Newport and Bellevue. People are getting priced out of downtown Cincinnati, so they're going across the river.
Oh.
Because it's cheaper and it's
yeah.
parking's not as expensive, and so property values are going up over there.
All very interesting. We'll follow
I got a fun
that.
Question for Scoop.
Oh yeah, here we go. I was ready to wrap it up.
This is where we ask the fun question.
All right, what do you got?
Hey, you know, whatever with you.
Just go.
All right.
You're a proud cat owner.
Yes, I am. Sister Betty Lou. She's a sweetie.
Your cat's name, yes, you just said it. Your cat's name is Sister Betty Lou.
Is there a way we can share pictures with the listeners?
Oh, here? We've already got sure. a picture that I pulled in out of the system that I was going to ask your permission if I could run that
absolutely.
When we post this. when we run our headshots, instead of running a headshot of you, I was going to run
Please?
A Sister Betty Lou.
That's way better.
I totally agree.
So tell us the story behind why your cat's name is Sister Betty Lou.
Oh yes, yes, indeed. It's a very touching story. So get your tissues.
I love this.
Well, I rescued her from Ohio Alley Cat Rescue. They do great work. And one of the heads of adoption there, she's a nun. I'm not sure what type of nun. And her friend had just died. When my cat came into the shelter, they had rescued her from a kill shelter somewhere. Uh-huh. And just because, you know, the timing there, she honored her friend, who was Sister Betty Lou, and named the cat after her. And I couldn't change the name. I'm going to call her like Mittens or something. That would be, I'm not,
Sister Mittens.
I'm not made of stone, you know? And it's like, yeah, there's no way I could. So that was a touching tribute. And she was very happy that I kept the name. So,
And if
you need a cat, I cannot speak highly of Ohio Alley Cat Rescue. They do great work.
Ohio Alley Cat Rescue.
They're in Madisonville.
How old is Sister Betty Lou?
She will be 5 in June.
She's a good-looking cat.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, she'll be 5 in June. Yes, 5 in June. Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
That picture you took over that I think maybe we'll show the masses tomorrow.
I think we have to share
tomorrow,
it.
Today, sorry, as this airs on Wednesday.
She doesn't take a bad picture.
I would like one of those, like a glamour shot style, like from the just go to the mall, you and Sister Betty Lou, and you're just holding Sister Betty Lou ever so calmly.
She wouldn't
like that. That's what I would like to see.
The little shadow photo, kind of up in the corner.
Oh yeah, or maybe you could get like the lasers background behind you.
Yeah.
I like that.
Oh, she would love the lasers.
I think that could be. I think that should become your new actual headshot for all your stories.
You got
here.
It.
Hashtag SBL. Hashtag Sister Betty Lou.
Sister Betty Lou.
I will send you this.
In honor of Sister Betty Lou. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, Scoops. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. This has been a blast.
All right.
You guys take it easy.
All right, big thank to Scoops for coming in and joining us in a breakdown of a really as important of an issue as you can find when you talk about the future of people that we have followed closely. I mean, how different would Chabot and Pureval have been, right?
Absolutely.
And you know, even Brad Wenstrup, I mean, who we had on this show, these people are everybody in the state that runs is super affected by this, and we'll be tracking it very closely.
You know we're ground zero here for that.
Yep.
Because the new gerrymandering laws that even were going to go into effect in 22 said you can't split up counties the way that we've split it up here in Hamilton County. And so that's probably spells the end of career for Steve Chabot.
Right. Keep following down cincinnati.com. We have it all there for you. And all right, let's move on now. And time for our That's So Cincinnati.
So Cincinnati.
Oh, there it is. I love it.
Bittersweet when the name
moment of the week. Yeah. So my That's So Cincinnati moment is really what's been about a six-year moment for me. And that has been the pleasure and honor to be able to work at the paper that I grew up reading front to back every single day, and then eventually going to the website every single day, and then moving all around the South, working at different newspapers, and still going to cincinnati.com every single day because I love this place even and missed it terribly when I worked elsewhere. And having the opportunity to come back and work here the last 6 months has been just I felt so Cincinnati because I've just been so proud to be a part of this place that does such great work. And and you're right, it is bittersweet because I'm moving on, and this is going to be my last podcast here. And sometimes you have to alter your path a little bit. Mm-hmm. And altering it away from this is one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make in my life, because I've just been so happy to be here and so thrilled. And I have loved doing this podcast. I remember we first talked about it way back, like probably about a year ago, we first started kind of kicking around the idea of doing this. And
we went to O'Malley's in the alley.
Of course, which
had
is
a meeting.
You know what that is?
So Cincinnati.
You got to go to O'Malley's. I think I had the grilled cheese.
I remember. Yeah. It was cold.
It was cold.
So that was early in 20.
Yeah, what? Not the sandwich. It was 2018. Cold outside. Yeah, no, the sandwich was delicious. But, you know, and it was one of those things where I love that we do this as a paper, and I know so many people like John, who we had as our guest on Friday, says this is kind of a way podcast is how I get my news now, and the idea of being able to bring all of this out and shine a light on so many people that nobody would have heard of. This has been one of the coolest things to be a part of, and I love this. Mm-hmm. And I love that we established it, and look, y'all knew me. It's going to keep going on. Sherry Coolidge is going to take over. She's awesome. And you guys have a rapport. I can only imagine how absurd this is going to get, because I already enjoy you guys together on here or just at your desk talking for hours. So I can only imagine you guys coming up with ideas for the show is going to be great.
It's going to be fun. Right now, I am sad to lose you. I'm very happy for you, your family. I'm sad for us. It's okay to be both. It's cool because you and I have become friends, and I think right away we had a good rapport out of this. And this was your baby, and you created it. And I told you this off the mic that it really came at a time when I was really looking to try to do some different things in my career, and this has just been so much fun. And I owe you a lot. I at least will owe you a doom pedal. From 50
I'll accept,
West.
I'll accept that.
Just one. No.
Yeah.
and also, I have to say, your wife Megan, who is the brainchild behind, she came to you. Shoot, what was that? A year and a half ago, maybe a couple years ago,
because she doesn't listen to the Bengals podcast, but she loves reading you, and she wanted to hear you.
Yeah, she's awesome, and like that's so cool. I love that story and how she talked to you about that, and you just took that, and we're gonna miss your creativity, your great coverage of the Bengals, what you've done on our video and podcast platforms. But I wish you, Megan, your daughter, and you're soon
yeah,
to be
number two.
Number two. We don't know yet.
We don't know yet. We'll know soon. We'll know soon. Gotcha. Yeah. We don't know yet. Yeah.
So the four of you, all the best.
Well, I appreciate it, Jason. It's been an absolute pleasure, my man. And your coverage and this whole thing is going to keep going on. It's only going to get better. And again, like we mentioned earlier, shout out to everybody that has hopped on board with this thing, because yeah. The reason I think this is great is it's about, like when we had to write the description for this, I'm like, it really is. It's about the Cincinnatian, and I love just having something that I really feel like is just out there for all different worlds, whether you're tribe, whether you're Brad Wenstrup, whether, you know, whatever you are, as long as you are so Cincinnati, you know, you belong here and you belong on the, and we want to highlight those people, and including the great reporters that we have in our newsroom that do incredible work every single day. So
mixture of fun and serious stuff and politics and current events, some sports, a little music. Again, it all kind of comes back to that one big umbrella that it's
and that's
all
not
about
going
Cincinnati.
Away. And that's not I may be moving in on, but you know, that ain't going away. It's still going to continue. So keep plugging away in here. Every Wednesday morning, remember that Cincinnati will post. And can I get one last update of the faucet? Can I get what is the status of the faucet and the duct tape that was coming apart at the seams and starting to beat up?
It's still beat it up, but that's it.
You haven't gone in.
Nope.
You haven't had the flooding.
Nope. All right. It's still holding strong, and whatever. I don't even know what the brand was. I think it's Flex Seal Duct Tape, folks. Shameless plug. Some good stuff.
Life-saving. All right. Jay, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
And thanks to everybody that has listened to the podcast. Remember, download, subscribe, leave comments, all of those things. It's been great having you around, and hope you all have enjoyed it. And I will catch you on the flip side.
We'll be back next week.
Yeah. Talk to you later.